Res ipsa loquitur is a Latin legal phrase that translates to English as the thing speaks for itself. This doctrine is commonly applied in civil tort actions to establish the negligence of a defendant. Imagine that an elevator in an apartment building plunges several floors, injuring the people inside it. Or a lawnmower box falls from a high shelf at Costco, crushing a customer. The plaintiff might not be able to prove exactly why the elevator plunged or why the box fell from the shelf. But they don't have to because, well, the thing speaks for itself. Elevator cars and boxes don't typically fall on their own, and so, under res ipsa loquitur, jurors can infer that there must have been some kind of negligence by the defendant that led to the plaintiff's injuries. And so, under civil law, where the burden of proof is simply more likely than not, this makes a lot of sense. Conversely, courts have found that res ipsa loquitur doesn't apply in criminal realms, where the prosecution must prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The prosecution can't simply point to a dead husband or child and claim that their wife or mother must have murdered them because people don't die on their own. Instead, the prosecution has to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt that some specific act or acts by the defendant caused the death of the victim. Or, at least, that's how criminal law operates in the vast majority of cases. But there's a clear exception to this rule, and it's one that's led to countless caretakers, typically mothers, being wrongfully convicted of the killings of their infants. It's one that's persisted for decades despite no data to back it up, but with increasing recognition that the emperor has no clothes. This is the story of shaken baby syndrome, and this is the story of Michelle Healy.
Hi, and welcome to Undisclosed Toward Justice. My name is Rabia Chaudhary. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here with my colleague, Colin Miller.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm a professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog.
In 2012, Michelle Healy lived in Toms River, New Jersey, with her husband, Mike, and their three-year-old twins, one girl, one boy, both with blonde hair. Located on the Jersey Shore, Toms River has been featured in various TV shows, including Boardwalk Empire, and was also where the original Amityville horror movie was filmed. But despite the deaths in this show and movie, Toms River is seen as a safe place, often ranked as one of the lowest crime communities in the country. Michelle and Mike were friendly with their neighbors, Kelly and Adam Hess. And in August 2012, Michelle had been babysitting for Kelly and Adam's 14-month-old Mason for about a year. About a week before August 28th of that year, while Michelle wasn't babysitting Mason, he fell in the dining room in his home, hitting his head on the hardwood floor. According to his parents, this led to a big bruise on his forehead. That takes us then to August 27th, 2012, when Michelle was babysitting Mason at her home. On that day, Mason was having issues. Michelle sent Kelly a text stating, "Mason just walked into the sliders. Think the bump now looks bigger. Leaving the screen on now." And Kelly responded, "LOL, unreal." Mason also threw up while Michelle was babysitting him, leading Kelly to take him to the doctor. There, Mason was diagnosed with ear and upper respiratory infections and prescribed antibiotics by his pediatrician. Michelle was supposed to babysit Mason the following day, but Kelly gave her an opt-out via text message. On August 27th, after Michelle said she was still fine babysitting Mason the next day, Kelly texted her, quote, "Are you sure I don't want to get any of you sick?" In response, Michelle wrote, quote, "Won't be the first time, won't be the last time. Everyone will be fine." Tragically, that wouldn't be the truth. The next day, August 28th, Michelle again babysat 14-month-old Mason at her home. Everything started well enough. In text messages, Michelle wrote Kelly that Mason had eaten his breakfast and was playing with her twins. But in the afternoon, things took a turn for the worse. According to Michelle, at about 2 p.m., she was feeding Mason applesauce when he started coughing and choking, making it clear to Michelle that he couldn't breathe. Michelle says she put Mason on her shoulder and hit his back until the applesauce came out on her shirt. But Mason went limp when Michelle put him back down, so she ran down the hallway to get the phone and call 911. In her 911 call, Michelle said, "He has no movement in any parts of his body. His whole body is lifeless." Mason was taken to the local ER, where it was determined that he might also have a bacterial infection due to an elevated white blood cell count, and a chest X-ray revealed that he had full-blown pneumonia. Mason was medevaced to Children's Hospital of Philadelphia via helicopter, but to no avail.
4 days after the applesauce incident, and with Mason clinging to life, members of the Children's Hospital suspected child abuse neglect team came to Kelly and Adam with an explanation for Mason's condition, the only explanation in their minds, that Michelle had abusively shaken Mason. They came to this conclusion based upon a traditional triad of symptoms that Mason displayed. 1, retinal bleeding. In other words, bleeding in the retina of the eye. 2, subdural hematoma. In other words, a collection of blood between the brain surface and its outermost protective layer. And 3, brain swelling. This is what's known as shaken baby syndrome or abusive head trauma. To understand this diagnosis, we need to time travel back to 1971. In that year, British pediatric neurosurgeon Norman Guthkelch published an article in the British Medical Journal regarding infant patients presenting with this triad of symptoms noted above. According to Dr. Guthkelch, the parents in many of these cases admitting to being overwhelmed by their children crying and abusively shaking them. And so, he came to believe that when infants presented with this triad of symptoms, abusive shaking by their parents or caretakers was the explanation. 2 years later, pediatric radiologist John Caffey coined a phrase for what Dr. Guthkelch observed, whiplash shaken infant syndrome, a diagnosis that could explain this triad of symptoms even in the absence of external evidence of head trauma. Eventually, the diagnosis was dubbed shaken baby syndrome, with the belief being that it occurred in 35 out of 100,000 infants. And so, over the next 50 years or so, caretakers and parents, primarily mothers, were convicted of crimes based upon infants coming to ERs with this traditional triad of symptoms. These convictions came even when the defendant had no criminal record or history of violence, both of which were the case with Michelle. Indeed, after the doctors told Kelly and Adam that their only explanation for Mason's injuries was abusive shaking by Michelle, they told the police that Michelle would never hurt their son. But that didn't matter. The day after their doctors told Kelly and Adam their shaken baby syndrome diagnosis, Mason was declared dead. A couple months later, Michelle was arrested and charged with first-degree murder in connection with his death.
A mattress is something you rely on every single day, at least every single night. And yet a lot of people put off replacing theirs longer than they should, mostly because buying a mattress isn't always fun. In fact, the whole process can feel confusing and overwhelming. There are just so many choices out there. And that's exactly what Ghostbed set out to simplify. Ghostbed is a family-run company with more than 20 years of mattress-making experience. Their background is in manufacturing, which means the focus stays on the fundamentals: high-quality materials, solid construction, and comfort that actually lasts. Every Ghostbed mattress is designed to stay comfortable night after night using durable foams and built-in cooling to help regulate temperature while you sleep. It's not about flashy features or short-term comfort. It's about building a mattress that holds up and performs the way it should. They also keep pricing straightforward. Ghostbed mattresses are priced up to 50% less than comparable brands, largely because they avoid unnecessary markups. Every single mattress comes with a 101-night sleep trial, an industry-leading warranty, and fast, free shipping right to your house. There's a reason that Ghostbed mattresses have more than 60,000 five-star reviews online. Customers love the variety available. They've got 3 different kinds of mattresses that are all designed to help you sleep longer, cooler, and more comfortably. They even have a quiz that'll help you pick out the perfect mattress for you. Customers also love their patented cooling technology. It keeps you comfortable night after night that you can enjoy for decades because they have a 20-plus year warranty. Right now, Ghostbed's winter deals are coming in hot, and our listeners can take an extra 10% off site-wide. That's on top of their already great prices. Just go to ghostbed.com/justice and use promo code JUSTICE at checkout. That's ghostbed.com/justice. Use code JUSTICE. Some terms apply. See site for details. Mm-hmm. Michelle went to trial in April 2015. At trial, the prosecution called Dr. Alex Levin, who had diagnosed Mason with shaken baby syndrome. Dr. Levin testified that a significant reason that he diagnosed Mason with shaken baby syndrome was the fact that Mason had, quote, severe retinal hemorrhages. He further testified that he chose to use photographs of Mason's eyes for the cover of the American Academy of Ophthalmology publication Focal Points because he had, quote, never seen such a classic photograph that tells us and shows us what shaken baby syndrome eye findings are all about. It's just an iconic photograph. So, that sounds pretty damning. But on cross-examination, Dr. Levin acknowledged the dirty little secret of shaken baby syndrome. Specifically, he said that shaken baby syndrome, quote, is a diagnosis of exclusion, not inclusion. In other words, Dr. Levin couldn't explain how abusive shaking caused Mason's injuries, just that no innocent explanation could cause those injuries. And those injuries didn't just include the traditional triad of symptoms. The state also called Dr. Lucy Rourke Adams, an expert in pediatric neuropathology. She testified that Mason's cervical spinal cord was fragmented in the upper sections and was hemorrhagic and totally disruptive. In plain English, there was bleeding in the spinal cord and pieces of bone had broken off from it. The defense responded with their own experts. Defense pathologist John Plunkett testified that if Mason had died from abusive shaking, he would have expected to see both broken ribs and grabbing marks. As you might recall from our recent coverage of the Amanda Lewis case, these grabbing marks would be red circles or ovals based upon pressure from the fingertips while being grabbed. But nope, Mason had neither. No broken ribs, no grabbing marks. The defense also called a biomechanical engineer, which when you think about it makes sense. If you're diagnosing cancer, you want an oncologist. If you're diagnosing infertility, you want a gynecologist. But if you're trying to determine whether abusive shaking caused injuries to a child, that's not so much a medical question. It is a question about the biomechanics of the body and the forces exerted upon it. The biomechanical engineer who testified for the defense was Louis F. Draganich. But by his own admission, Draganich had, quote, no background in abusive head trauma or shaken baby syndrome and had never written any publications or conducted any experiments on the topic. As a result, Draganich was relying on studies by others, which he acknowledged had been discredited on peer review because, quote, the authors of the studies could not replicate shaking a live infant with a non-human species or mechanical prop. But in terms of replication, Michelle did take the witness stand for her own defense. And with a baby doll, she did a live reenactment of herself hitting Mason on the back to try to dislodge the applesauce from his mouth.
I may have hit him harder than maybe what you should. I hit him hard on the back four or five times, so I went. I don't want to do this.
In the end, the jury didn't believe her. They thought this was a typical case of shaken baby syndrome. A parent, or in this case, a parent babysitting for a neighbor, becoming overwhelmed by a crying baby and abusively shaking him to make him stop. And so, the jury found Michelle guilty of aggravated manslaughter and child endangerment. At the sentencing hearing, Michelle said, "Shaken baby syndrome is a flawed theory that has divided the medical community for many years, but it has also divided family and friends. This needs to stop." At the same hearing, despite initially believing Michelle was incapable of killing their son, Kelly and Adam Hess were now fully on board with the diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome. Kelly told the judge that only a horrible monster would do what Michelle did to Mason. She added, quote, "We ask that you consider the maximum sentence possible to punish this monster." Meanwhile, Adam directly addressed Michelle, stating, "We know that the devil has saved a special place in hell for you because only an evil being would hurt a child." In the wake of the trial, if you looked up Michelle's case, you'd see and hear horrible things about her. For example, the Daily Pink Slip ranked her number one in its list of the 8 most horrific babysitters of all time.
Daily Pink Slip.
From murder to sexual abuse, we're disgusted by the 8 most horrific babysitters of all time.
Number 8, Michelle Heal. This 46-year-old woman operated a babysitting service out of her home. While caring for a 14-month-old baby, it was found that Heal shook the child violently, causing spinal and head injuries. This resulted in the tragic death of the small child. Despite all the evidence, Heal claimed that the baby was simply choking on applesauce and that she was trying to help him. She claimed innocence up until the very end. In court, Heal stated, "I do not regret the choices I made that day. There is nothing that I would change." Yeah, well, your face says otherwise. She was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Should have been more.
But then, in January 2020, reporter Elizabeth Weil Greenberg published an article in The Appeal titled, "How Dubious Science Helped Put a New Jersey Woman in Prison for Killing a Baby in Her Care." The article was about Michelle's case and specifically how many in the medical community had started to regard shaken baby syndrome as junk science.
I had seen some of this. For example, in 2014, Merrill Goldsmith and Susan Goldsmith did a documentary called The Syndrome about the shaky science behind shaken baby syndrome. And law professor Deborah Turkenheimer has written some high-quality law review articles calling into question the diagnosis. At the same time, there was news that New Jersey was on the brink of starting a statewide conviction review unit. With the success that we've had working with a neighboring CRU in Philadelphia, I reached out and agreed to take on Michelle's case for free, with the goal of eventually submitting a request for review with a statewide CRU. With that, I started researching shaken baby syndrome in earnest. And what I quickly found took me to the same statistic we cited in our recent coverage of the Amanda Lewis case. That horrible statistic. 75% of women who are wrongfully convicted are convicted of crimes that no one committed. In other words, these are accidental deaths determined to be homicides. You see, in December 2015, researchers published a paper examining 7 recent abusive head trauma studies, including 476 diagnosed abuse cases. And what they found was that out of these 476 cases categorized as shaken baby syndrome, only 8% could be included as abuse cases in research that was reasonably free from circularity bias, while 69% were diagnosed as abuse in part because of the medical community's rejection of the caregiver's statement. In other words, there's been an epidemic of cases across the country in which parents and caretakers have been accused of crimes based upon a diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome despite claiming they engaged in no wrongdoing. And, as you might expect, most of these were mothers. But in fact, the vast majority of these cases did not involve abuse. Instead, they involved issues such as the mother being injured in a car crash while she was pregnant, or they involved infants who were suffering from severe illnesses, like the ones that Mason had when Michelle was babysitting him, or they involved infants who died from underlying medical conditions. We've had law professor Valina Beattie on the podcast before in our Pam Lanier series. I've consulted with her on the case of Tasha Shelby, who was sentenced to life in prison based upon allegedly abusively shaking her fiancé's 2-year-old son to death. But decades later, the medical examiner who first claimed this was a case of shaken baby syndrome shifted his diagnosis. Here's coverage of the case by Flawed Forensics.
Dr. Leroy Reddick, the same medical examiner who ruled the child's death a homicide, changed the death certificate to an accident in 2018, 18 years later.
How rare is it for a medical examiner to change a death ruling?
Incredibly rare. Dr. Riddick testified in hundreds of cases. He performed autopsies in even more cases. And this is the only case where he changed his opinion.
Today, Dr. Reddick can't say why he changed Brian's manner of death. He passed away 2 years ago.
Nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I don't.
But he did explain himself in this recorded deposition in 2017.
If you could tell the prosecutors or the detectives something different today about the results, what would you say?
That I made a mistake on my conclusions, and that given the information I have now, that the child died from hypoxic encephalopathy with herniation due to seizure disorder.
A brain injury due to a seizure disorder. Remember, it's exactly what Tasha told police she witnessed Brian suffering from after falling from his bed.
Well, we thought, oh, well, they're going to let her go. There was no homicide. You can't keep someone in prison if there's no homicide. And they're not letting her go.
Of course, the Tasha Shelby case has echoes of the Amanda Lewis case we just covered. Tasha was convicted of killing a child, despite it now being clear he died from a seizure disorder. And the prosecutor in Amanda's case is on the record as moving forward with a murder prosecution against Amanda for drowning her daughter Adriana due to the supposedly suspicious death of her first son Alex, despite the fact that his death was also declared due to a seizure disorder.
I lost both of my parents in the last few years, and it makes you grow up in ways that you really never realized you had to before. It also made me think about the ways that I have to support my family every single day, and it hit me that I need a plan for the times when I can't be there, because that time will eventually come. Fabric by Gerber Life was built to help parents get term life insurance quickly and easily so that we can have that plan in place for our families when they need it the most. If you've been putting off getting life insurance, I promise you there's no better time to do it now, because you never know when your family will need it. Over two-thirds of Americans overestimate the cost of life insurance, but it's actually more affordable than you think. And Fabric by Gerber Life makes it so quick and easy to make sure your family has more financial protection this year. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance that you can get done today. It's made for busy parents like you, like me. It's all online, on your schedule, right from your couch. You could be covered in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Fabric has flexible, high-quality policies that fit your family and your budget, like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Fabric has partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families like yours for over 50 years. And there's no risk. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Fabric also has free digital wills, tools to invest in your kids' future, and more. All right from your phone. So join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/justice. That's meetfabric.com/justice. meetfabric.com/justice. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. So what was behind the doctor changing his diagnosis in the Tasha Shelby case? It seemed that it was based on a change in the science. Recall that he changed his diagnosis in 2018. But in 2016, the Swedish Agency for Health Technology and Assessment of Social Services, which reviews the evidentiary basis for medical services, produced a report on the triad of injuries typically associated with shaken baby syndrome. The SBU conducted a systematic review of the available medical literature on the presence of the traditional triad of symptoms in cases of suspected traumatic shaking of children. The aim of the review was to address the following question: to determine how reliably the triad or its components can be explained by traumatic shaking. The review found that there is not a single high-quality study supporting the shaken baby syndrome diagnosis. Now, before, we noted some of the alternate explanations for the triad of symptoms that's traditionally been associated with shaken baby syndrome. But we didn't note the biggest one: short falls, which is exactly what happened with Mason soon before his death. In 2001, the American Association of Pediatrics published a position statement informing its members that pediatricians should presume abuse when a child has the traditional triad of symptoms, and that, quote, the constellation of these injuries does not occur with short falls. Well, in 2009, the AAP changed its position, concluding that the injuries seen in shaken baby syndrome cases can be caused by accidental falls, stating that, quote, controversy is fueled because the mechanisms and resultant injuries of accidental and abusive head injury overlap.
Given that Mason suffered from a short fall and then aggravated that injury by walking to a slider, well, this seemed like a compelling alternative explanation for his death. And so I set out to find whether there were any comprehensive studies dealing with the issue of shortfalls as an explanation for the injuries associated with shaken baby syndrome. And soon, I struck pay dirt. Just before Michelle Healy's trial, Dr. Chris Van E published the results from his landmark study on the issue in the Washington Post. Dr. Van E is a biomechanical engineer and the principal engineer at Design Research Engineering. In this study, Dr. Van E concluded that shortfalls are a far likelier cause of infant deaths than abusive shaking. Dr. Van E had a 195-pound man vigorously shake a 22-pound crash test dummy and recorded maximum force measurements between 6 and 8 Gs. In other words, acceleration measured as a multiple of the Earth's gravity. For reference, between 6 and 8 Gs is the amount of force about twice what would occur when you're doing jumping jacks. Then, using that same 22-pound dummy, researchers simulated a fall from a couch onto a hard floor overlaid with carpet with a direct head impact through the shortfall. Maximum force measurements for this test exceeded 100 Gs, spiking at roughly 15 times greater than shaking. In other words, quote, the results showed that falls with a direct impact to the head produced far more acceleration than shaking. As a result, Van E was able to reach two clear conclusions. First, abusive shaking is exceedingly unlikely to produce the traditional triad of symptoms associated with shaken baby syndrome. And second, a shortfall is far likelier as an explanation for this triad of symptoms. It's hard to describe how critical this study could have been in Michelle's defense at trial. As noted, the study involved a 22-pound crash test dummy. And guess what? Mason was exactly 22 pounds on the fatal day that Michelle babysat him. Moreover, as noted, Van E's study was the newest research on the issue at the heart of Michelle's trial, coming out about 2 weeks before Michelle's trial. So I reached out to Dr. Van E to see if he had agreed to take a look at Michelle's case. And his response left me in utter shock. You see, Dr. Van E said he had already taken a look at Michelle's case. You might recall the pathologist John Plunkett testified for the defense at Michelle's trial. Well, it turns out that Dr. Plunkett recommended the defense hire Dr. Van E as the biomechanical engineer to testify for Michelle at trial. The defense agreed, gave Dr. Van E the medical materials in the case, and asked him to prepare a report. Van E dutifully did a draft report, emailed Michelle's lawyers to let them know he had prepared the draft report, and then never heard from them again. Van E forwarded me the email he had sent to Michelle's legal team, and so I reached out to Michelle's trial lawyers and asked about why they gave Van E the cold shoulder. In response, they had no idea that Van E had done a report in the case. When I asked why they had never followed up with him when they had retained him to prepare a report, they didn't have an answer. We may never know what happened on that front, but we do know what Michelle's lawyers did when they thought that Van E had dropped out. They hired a second biomechanical engineer, one with no experience in shaken baby syndrome, one who was torn apart on cross-examination precisely because he hadn't done the type of study that Van E had published in the Washington Post mere weeks before Michelle's trial.
I grew up around a lot of dogs, not because I ever had one, but because my dad was a veterinarian, and I grew up working in his clinic, and year-round, we would see folks come in totally confused at their dog's behavior. Pups who have itchy ears, they would be prone to ear infections, they'd have diarrhea, poor digestion, they just could not figure out what was wrong with their dogs. Well, guess what? These are not normal dog behaviors. They're actually signs of allergies, and allergies in dogs flare up when bad bacteria take over the gut, because 90% of your dog's immune system lives in the gut. We've heard a lot about gut health for humans in the last decade or so, but just like humans, dogs also need probiotics, good bacteria, to strengthen their gut health and calm an overactive immune system. That's why I recommend Better Wild Allergy Relief Soft Chews to all my dog-owning friends. It's a supplement designed to support your pet's allergy defense system by strengthening their digestion. They are the first and only chews with ancestral advantage wolf probiotics that are derived from your dog's mighty ancestor, the wolf, and that helps restore a healthy balance of good bacteria in the gut. So if you have ever wondered why your dog is suffering from all kinds of skin issues like red patches and spots and itchiness, why their digestion just seems off, if they're licking their paws a lot, shaking their head, eating grass, they just seem generally uncomfortable, and you have not considered the connection between their gut health and the allergic symptoms that they're showing, you have to check out Better Wild's Allergy Supplement Chews. Better Wild's Allergy Supplement Chews include four key ingredients. There's a premium blend of wolf probiotics called the Ancestral Advantage. There's a postbiotic derived from kimchi that's been clinically proven to reduce itchiness and redness in just 2 months. There's colostrum to boost immune function and fight inflammation. And there's salmon oil to support healthy skin and fur. Better Wild is committed to helping your dogs with science-backed, veterinarian-approved solutions that you can feel great about. And if it's veterinarian-approved, I am on board. Right now, Better Wild is offering our listeners up to 40% off your order at betterwild.com/justice. That's betterwild.com/justice for up to 40% off your order. betterwild.com/justice.
So, what did Dr. Vanier conclude in his draft report on Mason's death? A lot, but let's focus on three key findings.
First, he wrote that, from a biomechanical perspective, it is unlikely that shaking will result in head rotational accelerations, yielding a primary traumatic subdural hematoma in a normal healthy child. While I cannot rule out that Mason was physically abused, there are no reported external injuries to substantiate this. There are no reported skull fractures, bruises, or other injuries to indicate that Mason was abusively shaken with great force or otherwise assaulted. Second, recall that the state had Dr. Rourke Adams testify to certain spinal cord injuries that Mason had, which she attributed to abusive shaking. Dr. Vanney responded to this claim as follows. In my interpretation of Dr. Rourke Adams' report, it does not appear that the trauma she hypothesizes present in the neck is representative of the stretching-styled nerve trauma from shaking identified by Finney et al. Or that seen in inertial neck loading from unrestrained head motion in automotive accidents. Putting that in plain English, Mason's neck injuries did not have the stretching-style nerve trauma you'd expect to see if there were abusive shaking. And then, third, recall that the biggest basis for the diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome in Mason came from his retinal hemorrhages, which were put on the cover of a medical magazine as a classic example of the syndrome. Dr. Vanney responded to this as follows in his report. Omaya et al. Concluded that the level of force required for retinal bleeding by shaking, causing direct damage to the eye, is biomechanically improbable. And case studies confirm that retinal hemorrhages and other ocular findings are also found in accidental injury, including falls, and from natural disease processes. Given the present state of knowledge, the presence or absence of retinal hemorrhages or other ocular findings does not assist in the biomechanical analysis of injury causation.
This draft report thus became the centerpiece of my submission to the New Jersey Conviction Review Unit in Michelle's case. And I supplemented it with dozens of cases in which parents and caretakers were wrongfully convicted on diagnoses of shaken baby syndrome, despite the deaths being due to shortfalls. I also added case studies in which infants had shortfalls, many of them caught on video, which produced the traditional triad of symptoms associated with shaken baby syndrome. And in case you're wondering, as with Mason, these deaths weren't always instant. Instead, there were many cases of so-called lucid intervals, in which infants had short falls, seemed fine for hours or days, and then died due to their injuries. I put all this together in a 431-page report to the CRU, and I work with a public defender in New Jersey who has filed for a new trial for Michelle in court, citing the same grounds as those in my CRU report. But after filing my report, something interesting happened. A woman in New Jersey named Lucy Pham was 23 weeks pregnant when she was hit by another car in a rear-end collision. This resulted in severe preeclampsia, in other words, high blood pressure in a pregnant woman that can cause death. 2 weeks later, while 25 weeks pregnant, Lucy gave birth. The child, Deanne, survived this early birth, but had a serious heart condition and underdeveloped lungs, temporarily requiring that he be placed in a ventilator. When Deanne was 11 months old, his father, Daryl Nieves, says he was changing Deanne's diaper when the child went limp. Deanne survived, but doctors diagnosed him with shaken baby syndrome because he presented with a traditional triad of symptoms. With Nieves' trial pending, a pretrial hearing was held to determine whether testimony on shaken baby syndrome would be admissible. And the key expert for the defense was none other than Chris Vanney. He noted that there are always exceptions to the rule, but testified that, quote, "The idea that you can create a subdural hemorrhage by ripping a bridging vein for a normal healthy child without injuring the neck is not supported by data, because angular accelerations that are created in shaking are less than what is seen in even a one-foot fall. When considering whether the physical situation and the medical findings match, Vanney stated that the biomechanics says if you start shaking a child like that, the neck should be where the injuries would start. Ultimately, the trial judge deemed evidence on shaken baby syndrome or abusive head trauma inadmissible, concluding as follows. Abusive head trauma has never been medically nor scientifically validated as a diagnosis because it has never been developed through scientific/medical techniques or procedures, which in turn would make it a diagnosis that is scientifically or medically reliable. Providing no evidence that the defendant inflicted any trauma upon the victim in this case, abusive head trauma is a flawed diagnosis because it originates from a theory based upon speculation and extrapolation instead of being anchored in facts developed through reliable testing. There is no proof provided that abusive head trauma is in fact a valid diagnosis explaining an inflicted trauma which causes a pathology." In conclusion, the court went further in the most damning condemnation of so-called medical evidence I've ever seen. The judge wrote that, quote, "For purposes of use within a criminal courtroom to prove causation, abusive head trauma can be highly prejudicial and far less probative, given that this diagnosis is akin to junk science, in that it is testimony presented both inaccurately and misleadingly as scientific or medical evidence when it has little to no connection to scientific or medical testing, especially when no one has ever tested the capacity of an individual to shake a baby in an effort to cause the triad of symptoms defining abusive head trauma." The state appealed this ruling to an intermediate appellate court in New Jersey and lost. It then appealed to the state Supreme Court, with the pendency of that case putting a pause in Michelle's efforts to have her conviction overturned until that case was resolved.
While that appeal was pending, another case percolated to the top of the media cycle. Robert Roberson, a Texas man on the autism spectrum, had been convicted of capital murder in 2002 in connection with the death of his 2-year-old daughter, who, like Mason Hess, suffered from pneumonia. That conviction was based on a diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome. This was despite Roberson's claim when he took his daughter to the hospital that she had fallen out of her bed and hit her head. Many have claimed that Robert was disbelieved due to being on the autism spectrum, which is an entirely separate issue the criminal justice system has failed to fully appreciate. Others have claimed that he was convicted based upon junk science. Eventually, on July 16, 2025, Judge Austin Reeve Jackson scheduled the execution of Robert Roberson for October 16th. He would have been the first person in the country killed based on a diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome. But with that execution mere hours away, a bipartisan group of Texas representatives banded together to issue a subpoena to Roberson so he could provide testimony on shaken baby syndrome because they believed he was wrongfully convicted based on a bogus diagnosis. As primary support, they cited Chris Van E's testimony and the conclusion in the Nieves case that shaken baby syndrome is junk science. Here's coverage by CBS News Texas.
We begin with a developing story. In just 2 hours, Robert Roberson is scheduled to be executed by the state of Texas. That's despite growing concerns that Roberson is innocent. The lead detective in Roberson's case told a panel of Texas lawmakers Wednesday morning that he'd gotten it wrong.
He's an innocent man, and we are very close to killing him for something he did not do.
Roberson would be the first person in the U.S. to be put to death for a murder linked to shaken baby syndrome. As our J.D. Miles reports, efforts to stop the execution are still ongoing at this hour. He brings us the latest from outside the prison in Huntsville.
Here outside the Huntsville unit, the execution chamber is just behind and to the left of that door. We are expecting a group of state lawmakers to come out here and speak at some point as this legal drama continues to play out over whether the execution can go forward.
In a historic move, state lawmakers issued a subpoena to Robert Roberson in a last-minute legal effort to stop his execution. Republicans and Democrats on the House Criminal Justice Committee believe Roberson deserves a new trial. That's because the medical theory that the death of his chronically ill 2-year-old daughter was caused by violent shaking, known as shaken baby syndrome, has been widely dismissed by many as junk science.
The gambit worked, and Roberson was spared. The case eventually gained national attention, as there's been a back and forth and questions over whether Roberson will eventually be executed or have his life spared. That latter option soon gained steam when the Supreme Court of New Jersey issued its opinion in the Daryl Nieves case late last year. Here's more reporting by CBS News Texas.
The lawyer for a Texas death row inmate whose execution is on hold is hoping a ruling over shaken baby syndrome will help him get a new trial. New documents say Robert Roberson, lawyer, wants the court to consider a decision from the New Jersey Supreme Court. Just last week, the court ruled shaken baby syndrome or abusive head trauma is no longer admissible in New Jersey courts. The ruling cites lack of legitimate science and lack of general acceptance in the scientific community.
Specifically, the Supreme Court of New Jersey ruled that, quote, Nieves' expert testimony at the Frey hearing emphasized that lack of general acceptance of shaken baby syndrome, abusive head trauma. Each defense expert stated that no biomechanical study has shown that shaking alone results in the symptoms associated with shaken baby syndrome or abusive head trauma. Dr. Vanney testified that the scientific data does not support the proposition that someone could create enough force through shaking alone to cause a subdural hematoma, but somehow not cause injury to the infant's neck, which is very weak. Here, it bears noting that no such injury to the neck was ever identified.
Of course, this ruling doesn't just have significance for Robert Roberson. In an article after the New Jersey Supreme Court's opinion, NBC News wrote that, quote, others who maintain their innocence may be closer than ever to their shots at freedom. The example they cited was none other than Michelle Healy. The article explained how their ruling that shaken baby syndrome is akin to junk science could finally set Michelle free and prove her innocence. But it then added the following, quote, the Monmouth County Prosecutor's Office declined to comment on specifics of this case, but it said in a statement that it believes the state Supreme Court's ruling has no legal implication for Healy's conviction, which prosecutors contend rests on other evidence that can withstand any further challenges. As the person who's worked in Michelle's case longer than anyone, I have no idea what other evidence the prosecutor is citing. I've been through the case file top to bottom. Michelle has no criminal record. There's no evidence she ever abused her children or any children in her care. There were no witnesses to whatever incident led to Mason going limp other than Michelle herself. Instead, literally the only evidence of Michelle's guilt is the fact that Mason presented with a traditional triad of symptoms associated with shaken baby syndrome. But now, the Supreme Court of New Jersey has labeled this theory junk science. And it's done so based upon the testimony of the biomechanical engineer who was supposed to testify at Michelle's trial. The expert who published a study done with a dummy the exact same size as Mason Hess mere weeks before Michelle's trial. The expert who the defense team ignored despite a draft report that proved her innocence. In the end, it's unclear whether Michelle will be set free. And it's also unclear what will be done with the thousands of other parents and caretakers convicted based upon a diagnosis that at least one state Supreme Court has now declared junk science. But for the first time in decades, it feels like the science has shifted. There's a groundswell of support across the country to eliminate this bogus diagnosis from courtrooms across the country. And that shift could lead to any number of mothers, fathers, and caretakers being given a second shot at life outside the confines of a prison cell.
Years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners. It's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. Before I roll through the credits, I've got a few quick notes. By now, most of you probably know about our Facebook community group. If you haven't joined yet, please go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. But seriously, answer the questions because a bunch of you are still pending since you've only answered 1 or 2. They're easy questions, I promise. In addition to engaging with us through the Facebook group, you can also leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/undisclosed. We always check the messages, and so far, I think we've answered all of them. We also have a Patreon page with 3 different tiers of perks, the lowest one just being $1, which allows us to continue to do this work. Other tiers include bonus episodes, early access to merch, and even joining Rabia in a live true crime Zoom discussion. Just go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Now, on to the real credits. A huge shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production. Thank you to Patrick Cortez and Romero Marquez for our theme music. For anyone new here, you can engage with us online by going to Instagram or Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. We're also on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can always check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you all for your continued support and for supporting all of our sponsors. Until next time.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.